were about to tell me about your mother, who you described as
She felt my father was a middle-class, mild, liberal Jewish timber merchant. As many were. Not much temperament. Sweet character. He liked French comedies. I come from Des Flair de Caillebé, a French author of that sort. He read books that were put, could have liked Fedor. If you put a book, give him a book, he read it. He would never get it for himself. He had not many friends. Some Jews, some Russians. And other merchants come to dinner and get to bed.
An effective businessman?
He was a very able man, very timid. He never made or lost, fundamentally. Never made much money and wasn't liked by the enterprising Jewish merchants, some of whom he knew because he didn't take cards, didn't have any temperament, wasn't adventurous. He could have made a very good civil servant. He had an excellent brain, but he was timorous. And he knew what he was doing. He never did anything dangerous. So he always was comfortably off. Not very comfortably, fairly comfortably. I mean, he was very rich in Russia for the revolution, of course, because of the firm. But after it, well, there we were, we lived in
There's your father, but your mother?
My mother was poor, brought up in the ghetto, socially class below my father, even though they're first cousins. She was brought up in poverty and tough life, full of humor, strong temperament, lively, imaginative, and colossally frustrated by being married to a dull, decent, friendly husband. She really wanted a lover. She fondly used to go with people who proposed to her and whom she wasn't allowed to accept, and she might have been happier. And she wanted to be an opera singer and everything in the world. She might have become. She sang, this is why I was brought up entirely on a diet of Verdi and Bizet, because that's what she sang at home, in the long arias. She sang very well. Feeling. Wasn't a great singer, but his voice was very pure. And that kind of music was her life. Now, she
did some of that operatic feeling translate itself into her feeling about Jewishness?
In some ways,
part of the same temperament.
It's the kind of Jews who like that sort of music. Italian music, French music, not Russian church music, or Wagner or Bach. Nothing like that. And Beethoven, yes, the Moonlight Sonata, no doubt. But Schumann, you see, but the symphonies I shared later, as a result of bearing me. But anyhow, now. She was there, we lived in Peter's Petrograd. I better tell you about my life in Petrograd before I come to our character, which we'll see in a moment. This is done and has a manner, but you'll see inevitably why it must be so. First, we lived on Vasilievsky Ostrov, 22nd Linie. Above us was a mosaic factory. And I used to go a little walks with my governess and read the novels of Jules Verne translated to Russian. I also read Don Quixote for children, and Swift and Gulliver for children, and Dumas. Three Musketeers, 20 Ans Après, Vicomte de Bragelonne. That was the third volume of the trilogy I've never heard anyone else refer to. But it was. And that sort of thing.
Main Reed.
What?
Main Reed.
I told you last time. Main Reed. The Russians call it Main Reed. Captain
because
Main
Nabokov,
Reed.
Nabokov talks about being fascinated by Main Reed.
Captain Main Reed. He was English. not American.
But these are stories of the Wild West, of cowboys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Maine Reed certainly, Jules Verne certainly, and children's books, Traska. These are children's books in, which are read by so little ones. That I also read.
Did you read things like Bilibin's illustrated Pushkin and all these high-minded...
No, his son was my schoolfellow at St. Paul's. So I was showing them afterwards. But not at the time, no. No, I did read some Russian stories. I read fairy stories, yes. And I read a lot of stuff about Russian heroes. Bogatyri. I mean, Bova Karelevich, Ilya Muromets. That kind of thing, you see what I mean? All these, Korsakov heroes and so on. All it. Certainly, I had perfect conscience of all it. Yes, there were sort of knightly figures. Sadko meant something to me. I was taken to the opera in 1915 and heard Bohem, which I don't remember, Mogema, in Mariinsky Theatre. In 1917, I heard Shalapin sing Boris Godunov. I can't pretend I remember very much. I do remember one thing. When he sees the ghost of Dmitri, he fell on his knees and crept under the table and sank from underneath the table in a terrified manner and drew the tablecloth over his head. That I'd like very much. But I was told,
just the kind of thing.
Any child would.
Yeah.
See, I knew I'd heard him. Well, first piece of news I remember is Rasputin's murder, late 1916, had a newspaper headline. I was given lessons in Hebrew by Jewish students, Zionist Jewish students, who taught Hebrew in Hebrew. This was the fashion, because my mother wanted it. I was taught, never went to school in Russia at all.
Always tutored at home.
I was tutored at home by the Russian governors. And then by my uncles, who had come to teach me. I was very bookish. I think I told you that story about the lady.
Yes.
And if I was ill, I would be given a book called Elada, Hellas, which I was only cover to cover. I still remember Greek mythology entirely from that. Or a book about Egypt, in which the olden names were the ancient Egyptian, not Hellenized. Instead of Nitocris, called Nitakert. The Emperor Cambyses was Cambodia. All this I remember. You see, Ramses was Ramesu. No, that is correct. And that's the book I was brought up on. That's the sort of thing I devoured. Then, I did forward the Lampedon. Then came the revolution. I remember it quite well. My parents were very pleased by the first revolution. Liberal revolution. Or is it okay? Tremendous excitement on the streets. There was a coup de théâtre. Meetings everywhere, my uncles and aunts. My father had 1, 3, 4 brothers and 2 sisters. And brothers, when we were in 1916, when top classes were at school and became students at the university about that time. The elder brother was already an engineer. One was a doctor, two were engineers, and the third brother died of typhus in 1919 when there was an epidemic, of which his mother also died in Moscow, where they lived. Williamsburg, they used to come quite regularly, once a week for some reason. To Petersburg and used to give me lessons in Russian literature, history, Garibaldi, whatever they were doing, Nibelungs, all kinds of smatterings I got of that sort. But I never had a regular education. I read Pushkin, I read Nekrasov, that was purely amateur. But the Zionist student used to come twice a week and would then teach me to write a little Hebrew doggerel verse. That's difficult. Couldn't do that. Then there was another teacher who taught the heretical ideas my age, who was sort of who claimed that Mordecai was really Marduk, Babylonian god, that Esther was really Astarte, and other very wicked and terrible things which the rabbis would be horrified by. There was a man who tried to teach me the Talmud. I found it so incredibly boring that it had stopped. It starts with an ox or gold, a bull or gold or a cow. It should damage me. It's a legalistic word. Two men would seize a garment and tear it between them. Two of his belongings, so on. I didn't find fascinating. Then came the revolution. Crowds, my father, my mother's sisters, my father's brothers, from meeting to meeting. Wonderful speeches by Kerensky, rather, we call him.
Wonderful speeches by Kerensky, does that mean you heard them?
Oh, no. I had no speeches.
But you read them.
But I was told, well, they came to our house and said, how marvelous it's been.
Yeah.
They just come.
Yes.
There's enthusiasm. And they began talking about everything that's happening. The Milukov was, and Milukov was, and Kerensky was. And the Milukov didn't want to stop the war, nor Kerensky, but the white people did. And so on and so on.
Yeah.
Then, all that was said. And I mean, excited talk. I mean, the streets were in a state of turmoil at the time. I don't mean they were in disorder. People with sort of shining faces, that's all. Pratsan describes it quite well. And in Rivaga. Then, in the summer, we went to a place called Staraya Russa, which is a resort, where some children of our relations came. We played games with them very happily. There were tombolas, there were children's amusements in the parks, there were fancy dress parties for children. Exactly, there was no war. We were in about June, July 1917. The Italian orchestra, which conquered, I wanted to get out of Russia, playing with a very limited number of scores, each of which had to be called something else. One day it's called Venetian March, and it's called Finnish March, and it's called Italian March, same music, same.
This is in a bandshell in your summer.
Yeah.
In the summer place.
Very jolly time. Not much talk about revolution. Some. Vague news by the front. We'll come back to Petrograd. Posters everywhere for the constituent assembly. And vaguely, 24 parties. I vaguely gazed at these. I remember my names, including the times that we've said. And then I saw some young men tearing down from these posters and putting up posters with a hammer and sickle on it. I reported it, I thought it was jolly. Didn't know what it meant. Reported this to my father, extremely displeased. Said, very wicked and terrible than you. Then came the Balfour Declaration of Palestine, which spread like wildfire among the Jews of Russia. Indeed, one of its purposes was to seek the loyalty of Russian Jews and prevent them from stopping the war. My mother was very excited. My father very much less so. Didn't I want to come to anything. Got a bit mad. And then there were marches of Jewish children with Shields of David, to which I've led, that I've walked by to the blue and white flag. Not quite clear as to what I was doing. But I knew that something good had happened to the Jews in Palestine. I didn't know anything about the state.
These were marches to give thanks for the Balfour Declaration.
Well, to celebrate it. There were plenty of Russian Zionists and Russian Jewish Zionists by that time. I don't know where they all came from in the end. And the name is right. Zionism comes out of the insulation of the ghetto. And then melts and begins to acquire political ideas. Some say socialism will save us, and some say only our return to the soil.
Sense.
difficult to think from ideologically.
We are now in October 1917.
I heard there was a terrible party called the Bund, which one was not supposed to have anything to do with. That's a Jewish socialism. Socialism, yes, Yiddish, and a separate Jewish party of socialists. Denounced by Lenin as nationalism. Denounced by Zionists in the betrayal. Markov, etc. Now, I met them all in New York, 1940, 41, because it survived. Very funny, it was too. Wonderfully exotic. And talking to them was rather wonderful. The last generation who could still meet at that time. And then came the Bolshevik Revolution. Nobody had any idea that the revolution had occurred in my world. The first thing was general strike against the revolution. The lift stopped working. The porter appeared in officer's trousers, which he was very pleased to have, because they looked nice on him. No trams, no lifts. Baker shops closed. Oh, I forgot to tell you. In the early parts of the revolution, the only people who remained loyal to the Tsarist regime were the police.
The Faraon.
Faraoni. Not in the books. I've never seen Faraoni in history of the Russian Revolution. They existed. They did sniping from the rooftops or attics. I saw a man like that, Faraon, being dragged off by a lynching bee in the street. Pale man, struggling, with a crowd moving, dragging to a very nasty fate. I've never forgotten it. My whole horror of terrorism dates from that.
Of violence.
Of seeing this man's face. And even the wickedest man in the world, what we know. For a pale-faced man being dragged off to his death, it is under a tint. By a savage crowd screaming. That's about March. March, April 17. March.
Do you remember where you were when you saw that? Were you in the street? Or
in
were
the street.
You were in the street, yes. With your governess.
In Nevsky Prospect. We moved in the middle of 17 to Anglicky Prospect. And above us, I told you, lived, we had Lucy Korsakov's son-in-law and daughter below us. We had the Svetlanya Knyaginya Emeritinskaya from the Caucasus above us. The men in the
Who were they?
Emeritinsky was a Caucasian royal, one of these royal families of small states. They were always called Svetlanya. Most, I don't know what that is, Potemkin was. Svetlanya Knyaz Potemkin means most illuminated. I don't know what it means. Top prince. Well, royal princes usually call that. Svetlanya Knyaz. Not the Russian prince, who I call the officer, so. Knyaz Svetlanya, but Svetlanya Knyaz was client kings, I think. I mean, they were the children of dynasties, Caucasian or Swedish dynasties. Leven, I think, was Svetlanya. Because of the Swedish royal connection. Well, Emeritia is a province in the Caucasus. This is a lady who lives upstairs, whom we knew. And who else? And this Tavarish Ministra, the Under Minister of Finnish Affairs, his daughter, and gave these little walks with. And then came the revolution, and the Finnish minister disappeared after a short while, and typically enough, was paid a pension to the Finnish government for all his life, because he had dealings with Finnish affairs. He was an oppressor, but all the Russians were not nice to the Finns, but very pedantically, because he had dealings with Finnish affairs, he was paid his Tsarist pension to the end. Very Scandinavian thing to do. And After about 2 days, nothing. The streets full of crowds. I didn't hear any shooting. As you know, the whole story of the great storming of the Winter Palace is a myth. I mean,
put about by another Regan alumni, Sergei Eisenstein.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. I mean, all that happened was that, well, they were, of course, troops marched, the Maven sailors among them. There was no resistance except by the women.
Yes, by the women's battalion.
By the women's battalion, and the Persian was cowering inside.
Yes.
Except for Kerensky, who escaped the women's clothes.
Yes.
And Yovet Stereshenko, whom afterwards I knew in London, who was Minister of Foreign Affairs, friend of Bloch, who had heard Tristan 74 times in 1 year in Europe while studying Fuga and Kontrapunkt in Leipzig. He became, I said all about him, just not relevant. He escaped to Norway on foot, married Norwegian, and had a yacht in the Mediterranean which he managed to sell, and that got him going for a short while in England.
Now, we are several days after the November
Revolution. Not quite right. And then, gradually, it dawns. There are two men called Lenin and Trotsky. They're responsible. Now, Lenin was mentioned as a dangerous fanatic. Perfectly honest, but fanatical and fatal and might do anything, but certainly not exactly pure-hearted, but incorruptible. Trotsky was some kind of villain. They were referred to, always hyphenated, Lenin and Trotsky, never separately, in my circle. They were the wicked men who made this revolution, never knew how it would end, what it was for. Gradually dawned, then you see pamphlets began to appear, newspapers, and I remember very well what happened. There was a newspaper called Dzień, the liberal paper. It was suppressed. It appeared as Vecher, suppressed. It appeared as Notch, suppressed. It appeared as Polnotch, suppressed. It appeared as Gluchaya Notch, in dead of night, suppressed. End of that. It's exactly what happened to undergraduate papers in Oxford when I was a student. Proctor, suppressed student, and they keep on appearing under other names. Now, after about a week or fortnight, it was realized it's going to stay, probably. My father supplied timber to the Russian railways and went on doing so. Quite peacefully, wasn't touched. But we had to move out of our flat because there wasn't enough fuel. We had to live in two rooms. But nothing awful happened to us. We had a very monarchist cook who, when they, whom all the money was given, jewels and money were given to her, and she hid them. When a Chakar, sort of commissar, not commissar, under commissar, people came in order to search the flat, she covered them with abuse. As she was a proletarian, they dared not enter. In the very early days, revolution, you could not shove aside a member of the people. That saved us for the time being. My father was never arrested. Nothing, but no dramatic story to tell you, but all that happened was, they say, that they went on living in two rooms. Enormous queues for food formed immediately. I was put to stand in snow in felt boots for hours.
Valenki.
I wore Valenki all right, and stood there waiting to be replaced by some grown-up. In the end, for an hour or two, nobody moved. And we subsisted. That might be my wife. We subsisted. And then, gradually, my parents said they couldn't bear it. Sheer hatred of the regime.
What caused that? What instances?
Just ordinary bourgeois sentiment. Whatever they feel dislike. They thought it was the fear of constant look. People were shot in quantities. When you hear the terror only started, the story is far from true. And all kinds of people were shot, all kinds of trivial commercial offenses. It wasn't political. Speculation was called, but anybody could be hauled up. He falsely accused, immediately executed. So my father was sent for once by Gorokhova and number two, which was the Chika. We went to Pavlovsk for our summer.
This is the summer of 18.
Yes. And there, I remember hearing a concert in the station. There was a station at the concert hall of the Royal Family. And by this time I heard symphony by Cesar Franck, conducted by a Polish conductor called Fiedelwerk.
And you're not too cold.
No, no. That in Pavlovsk there were these concerts. There were, I made friends with, I don't know, somebody my parents knew, boys and girls. We played games, perfectly normally, and met in the park, in the Palace Park. We used to sit in those arbors, and I don't know if I can remember very much. Went on reading Yuma and talking about it. Sienkiewicz, Quo Vadis, the kind of book one read then. Revolution, not the war meant nothing, the revolution meant nothing. But what I used to see is men in leather jackets with guns and pistols. They were Cheka figures, and there was thought to be the people who were executioners. And the girls hugged them like mad. They were frightfully exciting for the young women, who were enormously excited by these wonderful gangsters. They used to walk about three in a row, up and down, so to speak, in the park. And this hoyard, constant eyeings by these girls, some of whom they probably had romances with. But I remember asking who they were, and they were regarded as dangerous, sort of diabolical types of very exciting sort. That I do remember. That is, didn't happen very long, I imagine. But the early revolution did produce these romantic executions. Most of them lefty social revolutionaries, I think. The man who murdered the German ambassador was such a one, called, what's his name? Mirbach, was the German ambassador. He was a left social revolutionary. They were all executed later. A lot. But anyway, these kind of tarditi, not the nuncio types, not all the Lenin likes in the end. Then we moved back to Angliski Prospekt. Life carried on, but my parents were determined to leave. They decided they were Latvians. For some mysterious reason, which I've never understood, Lenin let out these three countries. I never knew why. Nobody's ever explained. Maybe he didn't want to bother with them. But there's still Germans there, of course.
But wait a minute, isn't, don't we have Brest-Litovsk, we have...
Well, that's early 18.
Yes.
There's nothing to do with Latvia and Estonia.
They...
Brest-Litovsk stops all the Germans.
Yes.
They... Well, the German Freikorps Corps wandering about in that part of the world. Yeah. There's the intervention. A bit later. That's an archangel. The Lenins, I don't know, when they let them out, they let out three Baltic republics. Anybody who came from Riga could be repatriated there quite legally. So after about 6 months of bureaucracy, we went back to Riga. Quite normally with that. It took about 5 days. Train moved about 3 miles an hour. But now let me tell you the story about my mother.
March 1919.
We are May 1919.
When you return.
May 1919. May. April, May. Okay. And then.
Do you return to Albertstrasse?
No, that's all gone. We stayed with the first 2-3 nights in Porschnow flat owned by some relations. Then we moved into flat of our own. I can't remember, not Albertstrasse, no. Didn't think we'd get back there. We lived in, I think it's called Vigena Damba in Russian. God knows it was in Latvian.
And Riga at this time is one of the Baltic...
Capital of Latvia.
Is an independent Baltic
Absolutely.
Republic.
Yeah. Nice, decent little bourgeois republic of a dreary but dull but decent kind. Perfect yeah. Ordinary democracy. The Baltic barons have been expropriated.
Yes.
Count Kaiserling has made Admiral of the Latvian Navy. No great hatreds. sounded like the Russians, but not acute. But collaboration with the Germans in 1940 in Riga was due to ultimate hatred of the Russians. By that time, they disliked them more, I suppose, 41 rather than 40. The Russians annexed them in 40. Germans must have been 41. Anyway, what I remember is this. We crossed the frontier. All the policemen and firemen who were Latvians cheered like mad when we entered Latvian soil. We had to stop for, I think it was some kind of quarantine for lice-covered persons who came from Soviet Union. Had to spend 6 to 7 hours being deloused to fish, and then got into a night train for Riga from a place called Rezhitsa, the Russian name of it. What it was in Latvian, I can't tell you. We traveled in a hard car carriage over there. My father, my mother, me. Such money as we had was concealed in the right shoulder of my greatcoat. It was not searched. Otherwise, tremendous searching went on, of course, so we tried. Finnish marks, diamonds. Diamonds are put, I think, under the tops of brushes. Of the many sort of what we have here.
Do you have any memory that you left precious things behind? Things
the whole flat, everything, books, furniture, everything we owned, clothes, all that we had.
Did you feel a sense of...
Oh yes, because I love the books.
Painful,
there were these wonderful books and marvellous vellum covers. There were the works of Tolstoy, works of Turgenev, works of Zhukovsky, and very handsome covers, which I remember very well. There were translations from Goethe by Zhukovsky in a separate volume. And I've got vivid visual images. There were encyclopedias and things. All that, well, my father's brothers may have taken it away, I don't know. Encyclopedia, but it was all gone.
What was the state of mind that in which your parents made that journey? Do you remember
hope.
Them being...
Hope.
Hope.
Hope and... Not enthusiasm, but hope.
And
we must get out of this terrible place.
Was your state of mind the same?
I don't think I knew anything. I think they said we're leaving, or we're leaving. I don't know if I can remember thinking the communists were terrible. They certainly thought Bolsheviks were dreadful people. Not the faintest atom of sympathy for the regime, none. No discussion about whether some people are better than others, or whether there's such a case for Russian communism. Socialism, yes, not even socialism. Liberal state, Kerensky, yes. Milukov, yes. Republic, yes. You know, the Bolsheviks were regarded with uniform horror and hatred and fear. Straight emigre state of mind.
Yeah.
Just like the white Russians.
Yeah.
Minus the sort of Tsarist religious elements. And some shame about the number of Jews engaged in these operations, number of Jews employed, number of Jews in the Politburo.
Much discussion of Trotsky.
My family, my uncles, not uncles, but so much, because they stayed in Russia. They were students and they had quite decent careers under the Russians. So by that I was a celebrity. And I saw them all. 1945. But my mother's sister, her husband, those of you would say, willingly would they pay for a string up Trotsky. I mean, that's the kind of talk. No, uncompromising. We then crossed the frontier, entered the train to go to Riga, and I sat with my father on the left, and my father sat on the right, opposite two men. I was half asleep. Suddenly I saw a policeman enter and sit down, my mother's right. Two things struck me as very odd, but my father looked very disturbed. Following it occurred. These two lets said my father unfortunately understood Latvian, which had been taught by this nurse, who had a very good memory. My father knew not a word. I knew not a word. Nobody knew a word. The two lets were made very anti-Semitic conversation to each other, which was normal. territory of the very anti-Semitic country. The anti-Semitic countries were known to be Poland number one, Romania number two, Latvia number three, North Estonia not at all. Very curious all that. Lithuania, yes, half and half.
And as the national origins of concentration camp guards proved, well, that rank order is just about right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, they made anti-Semitic talk. My mother interrupted. Although she had no she had a Soviet passport, God knows what, she interrupted. And she said to them, glaring, in the very hostile and violent manner, said, there are very great many things wrong with the Soviet Union. But anti-Semitism is not a thing which is permitted there. They then decided she was a Bolshevik spy, Bolshevik agent. Telephoned the next station and got her arrested by the police. My father was beside himself, with my mother mainly. I couldn't understand why she was lunacy on her part. making trouble. We were hardly existent, nobody knew what our status was. Without any money where we could live. We were completely désœuvré at that point. Suddenly Wauchu went, sudden explosion of nationalist. That's what I mean by saying my mother was an absolutely uncompromising, intransigent Jewish nationalist by temperament. Nothing anti-Semitic was to be allowed. And when we arrived in Riga, the police appeared, and then a man suddenly approached my father and said, look, I'm a member of the Latvian Secret Service. I was in that compartment. I'm aware. I know it. My wife said none of the things she's attributed, except it's quite false, said none of these things. On small consideration, I'm perfectly willing to testify. But she's completely innocent. Well, he's paid his bribe, proceeded to testify accordingly. But still, the people, they did bring a case against her. So long as we were in Riga, the juge d'instruction, which is over the equivalent, we used to get little povestki, so they were called saying, would she appear in such a place and so on. However, then finally, the judge said, look, are you staying in Riga for the rest of your life? No, I'm going to England. In that case, I'll quash the case. The case is quashed. But that's what I mean about my mother. Hence my Zionism. It came with the blood. I was never allowed to think anything else. And I absorbed it absolutely naturally. We were Jews. There was a lot of anti-Semitism. Jews were not English, they were not Russian, they were not Germans, they were not Lets. They have to be somewhere else.
We must have a home.
I think so. Quite simple. Yes, we weren't in it. I mean, it's no good being, so to speak, perpetual some kind of kiviv. Above all, one mustn't deny it, one mustn't conceal it, one mustn't desert it. That is undignified, unsuccessful, so on. You see, and that's really where it comes from.
From so, her more than
no,
from him?
Not at all from him. He went along, didn't know Jews, so he wasn't hostile. He didn't mind it. If assimilation had been possible, he'd have assimilated very happily. She never. Pride and passion.
But isn't there a part of your own view of this question which is rather like his? That is, you would rather have assimilated were it possible.
Oh, yes. I was never passionate. I was never free. I was never ferocious. Not that it's certain. Oh, I think I would.
You simply believe, or you simply know, that assimilation is impossible.
Well, all assimilation is difficult. And in the case of the Jews, it's impossible, yes. If it's really, really well possible on a major scale, I'd be for it. God knows they say that in Israel. They can't talk to him. Even Margalit and people like that cannot understand it. Cannot understand it. Most left-wing sort of peace now. You see, I said, you know, if I rub the lamp and all Jews are turned to Danes, I'd do it. Horror. Let us do it. How to get this particular reaction. But otherwise, highly enlightened, very anti-nationalist people. Your instrument is still working.
My instrument is still working.
Then we stayed in Riga for about 3 months. I went to Professor Kupfer, who taught me Latin. The final verdict was that I was very superficial. What? Which there is a certain truth. Sehr oberflächlich, is the German for that. And then we moved to London.
Why London?
Because my father did a lot of business in England before the revolution. He was an agromaniac. He thought it was the most wonderful country there's ever been, and so thought to the end of his days. He thought education was wonderful. He knew about public schools, knew about Oxford and Cambridge. That's where his children and child seemed to be educated. If Russia had not blown up, I don't know what he'd have done. But as it was, my mother wanted to go to Germany because inflation, one could buy a house for sixpence, and she spoke the language. My father was set on going to England. He knew people there, he had a partner, sorts, for the world, sort of cooperated in selling all his timber in England. The partner was called Mayor George Alexander Payne. He informed him that the English did not live in towns, nor live in the country. My father decided not to live in London, because it was full of Jews, Russians, other undesirables. Quite differently. So we moved to what he thought was the country.
Serbia.
Turned out to be Serbia, right? Which was more like it then, when you got sort of clergymen in black straw hats and driving about in bicycles. That's very sweet. I went to school there.
You prepped for St. Paul's.
My parents, first dish I had when we arrived in Serbia was eggs and bacon. My parents were very able to give up the whole thing. Absolutely.
Right.
Jewish religion worked. Anyhow, no more observance of Jewish rights. Absolutely not. On the contrary, a certain revolte attitude. However, I have to tell you the following thing happened. My mother, at a certain stage, went to the butcher, Mr. Henshaw, to get some meat for the house. In the corner, she noticed an old gentleman with a small white beard, what appeared to be some kind of headgear. She said to Mr. Henshaw, Mr. Gentleman, she said, oh, that's the Reverend Mr. Fogelnest. He comes from Reading. He prepares the Jewish food for the two families who live here. She then went up to him and spoke to him. He told her he was a kosher daughter, as I don't know whether. She had a conversation with him about Reading, about the Jewish community, burst into tears, and recidivity occurred. After that, kosher people. My father and I were allowed to eat anything we liked outside the house.
But inside the house, kosher?
Not strict. It's sufficient. Not strict. Meat and milk are forbidden strictly. Meat, milk, and butter appear on the table. It was sort of half and half. But the meat was got from a kosher butcher. And it was natural belonged to the synagogue after that. The revolt did not last very long. My father didn't really like it. But being, as I say, weak, amiable, appeasement-minded sort of man, went along. I then went to school, called Arundel House School. My mother broke her ankle, was taken to a nursing home in London, and picked the border. I mean, I accepted her, but I was there all day, and became anglicized in that sense, fairly rapidly. And headmaster and his wife were very nice to me. I suffered no persecution. As a foreigner, Jew, or anything of the sort, none.
No persecution, but...
No mockery, nothing.
But longing, yearning,
for
nostalgia.
None. New life, that's my guy. New life, I began afresh. But when I had to write an essay, I wrote an imaginary story about the Russian Revolution. They knew I was a foreigner. The only time I ever suffered anything was one of the boys said, for a dirty Jew. No, Dutch German, not true, because of my name. At this point, not true. At this point, all the other boys sat on him and beat him up. Unique story.
Yes.
I was quite popular.
And you learned English effortlessly and immediately.
I had it in Covenant in London, in Petersburg, in Torquay.
Oh,
I knew, no. I knew about 75 words.
But you learned, very, very quickly when you arrived.
According to my mother, I came home in tears after the first day. All I could do was draw. But after about a fortnight, I must have learned to draw. I have no memory of all that. All I can tell is at the end of that year, we're talking about the year 1920, I took part of the second murderer in the Babes in the Wood.